Hi, kids. Welcome to Bronco Land. We got some smart ones in the room.
The Week 14 edition of the Horsin' Around podcast. Thank you, as always, for listening. I'm Andrew Mason, and joined for this segment by KOA and Denver Sports 760s and also the Broncos Radio Network, Andy Lindahl. Pleasure as always, my friend.
Love chatting with you all the time there, Andrew. I don't know that I like golf as much as Ben Hunt's office does here, which is where we're at. Ben Hunt, a golf fan. But I always love talking to you.
There's a lot of golf. There's a lot of golf fans in this building.
Well, you know what? I know that. Look at that. He knows. He hearts golf. He just said through the window. I'm glad to see that we've got the door closed and at least one of us is loud enough for it still to reverberate down the halls. I thought John Elway has been looking at me funny lately. Now I think I know why. I think we just solved the issue.
How do you know that he's not listening to this podcast on his Saturdays?
I believe that he's got to check it off, right? Got to be approved. Got to be number 7 approved, I think. So, you know what? You know, I know a lot of people in this building like golf. A lot of those same people were out at Jacksonville, I believe, a day early, taking in the local golf courses this past week.
Although I do believe Elway was actually, I think he was at the ACC Championship.
Yeah, I don't think Elway's playing a lot of golf a lot this time of year. The marketing guys and the guys whose job it is to make sure that you would like to advertise with the team, I think they were the ones out playing the golf. Just to be clear, nobody on the football side of things was enjoying a holiday, I can promise you that.
Yeah, still prime time for scouting. I mean, they'll certainly be out at some of the bowl games, I'm sure. Then you have the All-Star games coming up in January. But I think the Broncos hope that they're occupied with other things in January. At least John Elway does, that he's not necessarily dashing off around the country, that he's got things to attend to around here with the team in the playoffs. But that's another matter entirely, and getting to the playoffs in the first place, I think, may well be predicated on how the Broncos do this Sunday against the Titans.
You know, you and I are in the same thought process. I will say this. I think even if you lose this game, which is going to be a tougher-than-expected road game, when you saw the schedule come out, there always seems to be one or two of those. I think you can still make the playoffs. For me, it's a linchpin game in my mind. If you win this game this weekend with the Patriots, the Chiefs, and the Raiders, all teams you're chasing right now for things that you want as far as playoff seedings and who goes where as far as travel, you can hand them all a loss after this game and be in good position. I think you feel good about yourselves with the Patriots and Raiders having to come here. If you lose this game, I think you're squarely in the wild card hunt and knowing that you will be doing the traveling come January.
And having to make a bid for the wild card spot against three teams that are a combined 30-7.
Or 30-8, sorry. Not only that, Andrew, but you and I both know all three of those teams with this defense don't want you in the playoffs. They don't want to deal with you. Your two divisional teams certainly don't want to deal with you, much like the Broncos. You don't love a divisional team, I think, in a playoff matchup. They just know you too well. And the Patriots don't want to deal with you. They just don't. There's a good long rivalry there. Now, if they're going to get you in their barn, I think they feel okay about it. But all three of them would like to see the Denver defense not in the mix. So they'll all be highly motivated to make sure they can help you out of the picture for those last three games.
And certainly, if you – and obviously this is a big exception. But if you take out the late fade against the Chiefs, aided by three penalties on that game-tying drive, if not for that, we're talking about the defense having played three consecutive outstanding games in the wake of that loss to Oakland. Against New Orleans, they give up some yards, but they get four takeaways off of Drew Brees in that game. That's very, very hard to do. Kansas City, they dominate for 57 minutes, only fade at the end. And against the Jaguars, really just disassembled their offense piece by piece. Didn't let Blake Bortles get comfortable. He had to throw the ball early to try to avoid the Broncos' pass rush. Denver gets three takeaways. You might be able to say the defense is starting to round into form at this point.
Look, I would agree. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I feel like this stuff that the defense, you know, let him down at the end, I get it. They didn't stop it. I think you and I talked about it last week. I was shocked to see it. But I also know that was a tired defensive unit, much the same Kansas City's was worn out too. You know why? Neither offense could do anything until the fourth quarter for either team. And I think the reason why they both got some traction was because both defenses were tired by that point, And quite honestly, Andrew, I was a little worried we were going to see a replay of the fatigue factor into the end of the game last week when there was still just that precarious 7-point advantage that you held at the time. And I started to see what I thought were, you know, the secondary. I just was worried they were tired. And when you're tired, it's not that their level of play had dropped, but I was worried because you were fatigued, someone may bust a coverage. Something stupid may happen that would cost you the game, right? Even though you had earned, in my mind, the win.
Maybe it was a pass interference call. Exactly. Maybe something happened.
A little late to something.
Yeah. That said, on that last drive, it was clear from the outset Blake Bortles knew that he had to hang on to the ball another second or so, and that just set up the pass rush, and that set up Von Miller going through the offensive lineman. And Miller did eventually get credit for the sack, by the way, even though
he should.
Yeah.
Shoved a lineman into him to force the fumble.
You have to have some good judgment. It's like in hockey, you know. If the opponent puts the puck in its own net, you know, the last guy who touched the puck for your team, or you know, the guy who caused it, is going to get the goal. Von Miller should get the sack because he causes it entirely by pushing the lineman into Bortles. Good call. And so he gets a sack. He gets the forced fumble. Miller's up to, I think, 13.5 sacks now this season, leading the league.
I want to touch on one more thing with Jacksonville before we move on to Tennessee, quite honestly there, Andrew. And you know this. I'm gonna again just call out my media brethren here. And I'm not saying I'm always above the fray, but I am worn out, especially when it comes to the Bronco quarterback position, on the he's either really good and a future Hall of Famer or he sucks. Because now all of a sudden this week, Paxton Lynch, did he have the start he wanted to? I don't think he did. Honestly, when you don't get a first down or you had one first down in the second half, that's not what you're looking for. But to tell me now, I'm hearing all these people say, well, he sucks. If they make a mistake, this might be an awful. Will you just stop? The kid has made two starts. There was tremendous playoff pressure in the second one. It's clear to me, I don't know how you saw it, but from the sidelines, the loose Paxton that wasn't afraid to throw a few balls down the field and take a few chances that we saw in training camp when the calls are basic, and he was just playing football, that wasn't the guy that took the field Sunday, nor should it have been. He had a team's playoff, and again, with this defense, we're talking about a defense that can get you to the championship if you get in the tournament. He had tremendous pressure on him in a system that he's still trying to wrap his mind mentally around, and it showed. It showed because I don't think he was comfortable. He wasn't just playing. He was thinking too much, and that's what happens with young quarterbacks. We can judge the kid in a couple of years. Stop with the – don't send him to the Hall of Fame, and don't tell me he was a bust. We're so far from this story being written. I don't know why we have to jump on it after one game. Drives me nuts. I'm tired of it.
And then specific to Paxton Lynch, given his well-known prowess with a deep ball, we saw it in training camp. We saw it at Memphis. How many times in his life do you think he's going to miss two deep shots like he did to Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders when he's got the play-action bootleg rolling? That play was perfect. Both those plays were perfect until the throw. But I think I think he's going to hit that throw. I mean, maybe it was nerves. Maybe it was, you know, having a lot on his mind. But that's where he's just got to settle in and play. He's got to beat Paxton. Those shots are there. Another thing, he had a chance at a deep ball to Virgil Green. Makes it happen on his own, escaping the rush, getting outside, and the ball goes through Virgil Green's arms. That should have been an explosive play they didn't get. I think he's closer than a lot of people thought after this game.
And I'll tell you this. Do you want to know why his deep balls didn't work out? Because his footwork was screwed up. And his footwork was screwed up because I talked to Daniel Schlereth, son of Mark Schlereth. Big fan of the Broncos. Is going to have some exciting news coming that I can't divulge yet as far as his future career. But we were talking on my show the other night, and he, you know, he loves the Broncos. And he was talking about, just as a pitcher, he could tell, he said, everything's just kind of screwed up with the throwing motion. And he could see, as he put it, Paxton squeezing the life out of the ball, which told him, you know.
He's tight.
He's not feeling it. He's thinking too much. And Daniel said it was funny because Daniel's a reliever, for those that don't know. Was a top pick of the Arizona Diamondbacks. And Daniel said, when you're a top pick, you come in here, things are expected of you. You're not given the same time that some other people are given. He said he knows Paxton's going through that. Daniel also said, sometimes when you have time to think about things, because he also pointed not only to the preseason, but the half we saw against Tampa Bay. That, to me, is more true Paxton Lynch. He just went in and played the game. He didn't think about what was going on. He had to just go in there and play.
Remember, he stepped right in the two-minute drill.
Right.
Led them downfield.
Threw some nice passes, mm-hmm. hit some guys in time, threw his first touchdown. Daniel said that when he had to be a starter in college, he only has one start to his career, both college and pro. And he said it was the biggest disaster of his life. He said he had too much time to think about things. He spent, you know, he only made it two innings. And he just said he's the kind of guy where he gets where Paxton maybe is coming from. You'd rather just go in. Just go in and do it. Don't give me time to think about how big the moment is, especially when you're a rookie. I think some of that played out the other day. Everybody just needs to pump the brakes. Next year's training camp battle with what Trevor showed us against Kansas City, and I believe he can show us when healthy, and what I still believe Paxton can be, It's gonna be a fun battle to watch. Right now, you're doing what we all said you're gonna have to do. You're getting through the year with rookie quarterbacks, and this is what it looks like. Even Carson Wentz, you can tell me all you want to about Carson Wentz. He's not been the same since teams got six games of tape on him. Period.
Happens to almost every young quarterback. Once everyone gets the tape and starts dissecting it, that's when weaknesses are found. I mean, heck, go back to 2011 and Tim Tebow. Eventually they figured him out. Now the thing is, with Paxton Lynch and with Trevor Siemian, we've already seen the counter move with Trevor Siemian. I think we'll see it with Paxton Lynch. Don't know if, you know, obviously with Tebow it was a little different matter entirely because he didn't have anywhere of the quality or strength of the arm that these two quarterbacks have. But, you know, yeah, Carson Wentz, eventually he's going to figure it out. Dak Prescott, you know, he's going to hit some bumps at some point too.
When someone stops that run game, we'll see if Dak is every – you know, again, look, I don't want to be unfair to the kid. Mm-hmm. Dak's having a nice year. Congratulations. You're a playmaker and you're a leader. You've shown that. That's not – I'm never going to take that away from you. But I still insist if a team like Seattle rolls in there and can – now with the loss of Earl Thomas, it could make it more interesting. But if they're able to do what the Broncos can do at times, they can dedicate four or five to the run and stop your run game, and all of a sudden you've got zone coverages and safeties where you didn't think they were there. I mean, right now, Dak – plenty of times, sees plenty of single coverage or easier coverages to read than the guys are facing at the quarterback position on this team.
Let's watch what happens for Dak Prescott against Tampa Bay just over a week from now.
Great,
because the Bucs are playing outstanding defense. They've turned, you know, they've taken to Mike Smith's scheme. Gerald McCoy's healthy. Of course, he got injured back against the Broncos. I think we could see some holes in Dak Prescott and the Cowboys offense from that Buccaneer defense going in there.
Well, and they're an interesting team because their defensive numbers tell you, look, you and I have seen this. We've read this story. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it mimics a little of what we saw at Denver in 2013. A defense that's giving up the kind of yardage and points that they are probably is not going to be your best friend come the playoffs.
It's not sustainable. And Dallas is sitting there, I think, on a points per possession basis. Defensively, I believe they're 26th. It's going to catch up to them at some point. I mean, I look at a team like Seattle and I see them as a maybe I wouldn't. You know, I mean, I would even say if Seattle's the favorite, and I wouldn't sleep on Detroit.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
Detroit
had a very impressive performance going to New Orleans, holding the Saints to 13 points last week.
The team that I love, and I actually don't even mind watching them as the secondary to the Broncos. If I've got a game day to find a team to watch, I'm going to watch the Packers. They're done. I keep seeing all the hype. I mean, they're a team that the networks clearly love, the fan base. They travel well. They're clearly trying to keep the Packers in the conversation, but that team just – I don't know what's going on there. They're beat up, and they don't look right. To your point, I think that's probably Detroit's division and probably maybe the only team that gets out of there. I don't know. Maybe the Packers get hot. I don't discount Aaron Rodgers, but he doesn't look the same.
Yeah, but Green Bay still looks better than Houston, and Houston is one of the co-leaders of the AFC South.
How is that possible?
It's a mediocre division.
How bad is this division?
I've seen worse. I mean, at least you have three. It reminds me of a little of the AFC West back in 2011, except that the team at the bottom is really bad in terms of the Jaguars. I mean, it was a good effort by the Broncos to grind out a win, but no one's going to confuse the Jaguars with a good team. So everyone else is six and six. The Texans, the Colts, and of course the Titans. Titans probably have to win it outright because they've already been swept by the Colts. They've already lost once to Houston, so their playoff hopes may well hinge on what happens Sunday. In Tennessee, people are saying it's the biggest home game they've had in at least 5 or 6 years.
Oh, good. Lucky us. You know what I think the players are starting to feel, and they're going to feel it again in Tennessee? This Broncos squad is really seeing why it's so tough to repeat sometimes because, again, we covered the league long enough. You and I both watched the earlier Bronco teams go through it when they did the repeat. You are everybody's Super Bowl. Jacksonville probably will not play as hard against anybody else as they did against Denver
Sunday.
And
the Broncos actually are the only team in a month to beat the Jaguars by more than one score.
Oh, and they couldn't believe including the sold out. How about that?
Yeah. Well, thanks to Bronco fans.
Right. Well, half of them anyway. By the way, what is going on with that stadium? I could not believe the fan access on the field level, like where the cheerleaders are, those special set of bleachers they've got set up there. What is going on? That doesn't seem like a good idea to me.
They are doing everything to try to enhance the fan experience, to get Joe Fan off his – Joe Fan or Jenny Fan off his or her couch to go watch the games, stuff like that. They've enhanced the club levels for those who are willing to pay the prices. You saw the two screens in the corners.
Those were
impressive. With red zone.
Yeah, they're showing you other games. They've got a pool if you'd like to take a dip.
Two pools.
I did not see the other one.
Yeah, they're both. There are two of them at one end of the
were
stadium.
They adjacent?
One in each corner at that end.
Seriously, is there a dress code? That's what I never found out there. I was going to find out. Please no Speedos in the pool in the middle of a game. Please. I'm just asking. I'm just begging. Look, Miami does things differently. I'd be more worried about it in Miami, but it's still Florida. People still tend to maybe not really accept what's in the mirror.
I think the Jacksonville area has contributed its share of wild stories to the Florida Man Twitter feed. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
I think Jacksonville, Orlando, I think they've all had their Tampa Bay, Miami, I think they've all had their share.
Taking their turns.
Yes. Although people in the rest of Florida, like in places like Tampa Bay and Miami, they think Jacksonville is being in Georgia.
Yeah, Jacksonville thinks that they're in Georgia. I've had a few people tell me, we're southern Georgia. All right, good to know. I just need some place to eat. Please.
But on to the Titans.
Yes, where I can get better barbecue than what I had a week ago.
There's Jack's, Martin's, and Edley's I can vouch for. All tremendous. Actually had a dinner at Edley's back in April at the League Digital Summit. I believe it was there that I introduced my wife to hot chicken.
Really?
She didn't know how hot it was.
Is it as hot as promised?
Oh, if it's done right, yes. It's not what KFC does.
Right, I was going to, come on. Not
if it, no. If
you like getting wings at KFC,
yes,
right?
Yes, if you go to KFC, I'll have the hot chicken. It's no, that is not actual hot chicken.
That's just crappy sauce on their fried. Are they a sponsor? Am I ruining
No. I don't think they're a sponsor. So if you go to Nashville and if you want pure hot chicken, go to a place called Prince's.
Okay.
Prince, it's not in the greatest of neighborhoods, but food is amazing. If you want good Southern-style food, go out to Loveless Cafe. It's about a 20-mile drive outside of town. That's one that our friend Jeff Legwold speaks highly of course. Former Nashville resident, former Titans beat writer for the Tennessean back in the day.
Okay, I went to some here's where I get a bad impression of the South. You'll probably like this. John Elway's crush teams. We used to have a rivalry going with the Nashville Cats back in the day, and I was a color analyst for the team with Mark Stout. We had a lot of fun on the broadcast. This game, Mark Johnson happened to be filling in, the voice of the Buffs, and we went to some cafe. I think it was I'm not even gonna venture a guess, but it was one of those typical comfort food cafes. I think it was
meat
a
and
chain.
Three.
So,
well, that's why they say you get like a meat and three sides. But if it was a chain, I don't know that it was.
Yeah, I think that's what it, you know what?
Oh, Charlie's?
Knocking on the wrong door.
Good fun,
right,
good
right
time,
door,
start with O.
Something like that. It might have been that. But all I know is, here's where I was wondering, just where have I entered? What place have I fallen into here? Because I went to the urinal, and as you know, the gentlemen, the guys listening know, they put those stupid ads while you handle your business right in front of your face.
They do that here.
Yeah, it's everywhere. It's not a Nashville thing. But my ad happened to say, if you can't read, call this number. And all I could think of is if I can't read, this isn't reaching me. Do you know what I mean? You're not getting past the problem of me not being able to read to know what that number's for, right? And that's where I was like, where are we? Where are we right now? Who did this? Who approved it? And why is it in front of me at this point? Please get me out of here. Let's play the game and go home.
But I don't think you should impugn an entire city or region based on one sign.
Just bad impressions sometimes. No, you're right.
There is capable of idiocy here in the Northwest and Europe.
But I mean, come on,
they
Andrew.
Are here.
How many people checked off on this stupid literacy campaign that's not helping the illiterate? That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Now, to your point, we've actually stayed in downtown Nashville when we were with the Crush, and it was awesome. With the music down there and the food near the stadium is an awesome place to be.
Stadium's right on the river. It's actually a wonderful location on the other side of the Cumberland River. It's a good game day environment. They put in some new video screens. And as I alluded to earlier, they're talking about this being the biggest home game for the Titans in years. It should be a pretty raucous environment. Although, like Jacksonville, I'm sure there's going to be quite a few Broncos fans that find their way in, especially fans who picked up the team in the Peyton Manning days, and they followed Peyton since the University of Tennessee years, and they're still Broncos fans. I think the Broncos have managed to keep quite a few of those fans.
Oh, they have.
I've seen. They came aboard the last few years.
I think, you know, let's be honest about it. I think they lost a healthy number of fans when Tim Tebow left, but I think they
got them all. They got back. They got people back, and then some, I think.
They're very popular. You know, they're becoming the team. We're becoming like the Steelers and the Packers and the Cowboys, one of those teams where you can clearly tell the other stadium, for the most part, is irritated you're there. The owner doesn't because he gets some tickets sold. Mm-hmm. Man, those Jacksonville fans, which I didn't know there'd even be enough to put up a verbal protest.
They were very defensive.
Yes,
I think
they should be.
I think Tampa Bay might have been that way as well if the game had been better.
Right, which it was not.
Because I've been, as a fan growing up, in that Tampa Bay crowd when other fans came in. And I've actually, the only time I ever nearly got into a fight at a stadium involved a Bears fan when I was 17 years old. And I said, excuse me, and he wouldn't move.
Really?
I was trying to get to the bathroom.
Andrew Mason is a cordial gentleman.
I said, excuse me.
Not prone to fisticuffs.
I said, excuse me, and he wouldn't get out of the way. And I said, excuse me again, and don't take the hint. I'm trying to get by here. He's clogging up the aisle, and next thing you know, I'm nearly to blows with a guy who's a foot taller and probably about 120 pounds heavier.
Yeah,
that's not my best.
Midwest Chicago fan. It sounds like made his way.
It was a Bears fan. It was a Bucks Bears game. So yes, but the Titans onto this game
for the third time. Let's try again.
A tough matchup for the Broncos for a lot of reasons. They have a tight end, Delanie Walker, who can make plays down the seam and underneath, and that's caused the Broncos problems. It's one of the best running games in the league. Very steady. They're actually, I think, second or third in the league in runs of 6 to 9 yards. They're averaging 4.8 yards per carry. Not getting a lot of 20-plus runs, but they're getting those 6, 7, 8, 9 yard ones, the death by paper cuts type runs. Marcus Mariota's causing a lot of problems. He's able to hit the deep ball as well. They have one of the best deep ball rates in the league relative to pass plays. And then on defense, Carl Klug and Jarrell Casey on the inside are capable of causing the Broncos' interior linemen quite a few problems. You know, they draw a lot of double teams. They free up Brian Arakpo to get one-on-one on the edge, and he's got 9 sacks so far this year. It's a team that can cause you problems.
It's a team that can cause you problems in multiple ways. They're a multiple formation kind of team. I've heard from my friends that analyze games that this is going to be, you can get a lot of exotic looks. You can see some wishbone action in there. It's kind of like, it's funny you brought up Tim Tebow. It's a little like that old school throwback system where you see formations out of this offense that you're just not used to seeing in the NFL. And then they can run passes out of it. It can be run plays. There's misdirection. Like you said, you got to figure out who's got the ball. And sometimes if it's easy to figure out who has the ball, it's a big back, whether it's Henry or DeMarco Murray, coming to cause some pain. They like to play physical. They're going to try to beat you up. And so you got to wonder, how long – the Broncos seem to clamp down on everyone by the second half. It's about the gains sometimes you get in the first half before Wade Phillips, I think, decides really how he's going to attack you at times, because he's not going to show you his whole hand in the first quarter like any good D coordinator will do. The Broncos' offense would do well. We've said this before, but it's another game where it stands on the road, and at the environment you described that they're probably going into, which could be a hornet's nest, it'd be well for the Broncos' offense to extend some drives. You cannot have a repeat of last week where you don't have any first downs in the second half. And frankly, I don't know, with the way this team again, if you fool the Broncos defense a couple times and jump out to a couple quick scores, I don't know, sooner or later the Broncos in this stretch of four games, which has been rated the toughest closing stretch of any NFL team, got to start scoring in the first quarter. You can't be putting up goose eggs in the first quarter. You need to extend your drive and get points, and the defense can't let them have two long drives that end the quarter.
To be quite frank, last week against Jacksonville when the Broncos emerged from the first quarter scoreless, I basically said it was a victory relative to what they'd done in the first quarter all year long. But against this team, if you fall behind, you know, the way DeMarco Murray is running, you've got Derrick Henry who's a power gear, and you have Marcus Mariota who can take off at any time, they are equipped to have some sustained drives that shoe clock in the second half if they're if they have a 10-point lead.
They'll play keep away from you. And they'll play keep away early if they need to.
And they're remarkably clean in terms of avoiding mistakes. Marcus Mariota, I think it's the we all know the stat, no turnovers in the red zone in his career, which is incredible. He's only been sacked, I believe, 18 times this year. Does a good job, so he gets away from the rush, makes good decisions. He'll throw it away when it's not there. I watch the Titans and I think and I look at this team as being an incredibly smart team in how it goes about its football on a game-to-game basis.
They are. Now, at that said, I feel like we probably all made them out to sound like some 10-2 juggernaut, which they're not. It was said to me, this defense, and you're right.
Very soft in the secondary. Very soft in the secondary.
They are feast or famine, it was said to me. They'll get a couple plays, but you're going to get a chance to have your couple big shots, too.
You've got, and this is where you go back to Paxton Lynch last week. If he's playing, he's got to hit the deep shots. They will be there. If they've got, you know, whether it's man coverage or zone coverage, they are vulnerable on the back end. And if you've got Emmanuel Sanders one-on-one, if you've got Demaryius Thomas one-on-one, you've got to get the ball to them downfield and trust them. Now, Trevor Siemian, if he ends up playing, we saw that against Kansas City. I think you'll see some stuff from that game replicated on Sunday if he's in the lineup. With Paxton Lynch, I think he needs to just trust his targets, and he needs to be accurate. He needs to get the ball downfield to those targets, stretch out the defense, maybe force those linebackers. Wesley Woodyard is having a good season, former Bronco. Force them to play in coverage more than they would like, force them to drop deeper than they would like off the snap, and then that opens up things for the running game.
If it is Paxton as well, and we really don't know. Now, Trevor, we should say at the time that we're putting this together, Trevor did practice. By all accounts, looked okay, so we'll see what the report after practice is. But I don't know about you, Andrew. If you're Paxton, you know what I want to see? Get out of the pocket a little bit. Give me a little Jake Plummer to your game. Go do what you got to do. Well, start having fun again.
Yeah, and they did. They gave him the play fake boot. We talked about the play where he escaped out of the pocket and set up Virgil Green. More of that. Get him out of the pocket more. That is what he is comfortable at right now. And eventually, you start working with him to be a true pocket passer. But right now, if Paxton Lynch has to go, play to his strengths, and look, I don't think he's going to have another game where he underthrows two deep balls that should be, you know, one's a definite touchdown if it's on the money. I don't think he has a game like that, a game where he misfires on those makeable deep balls, especially because over the long haul, looking at what he did at Memphis, looking at what he did in training camp, that's a strength. I don't think he suddenly forgot how to throw the deep ball.
I agree with you there. Before we sign off, I got to get your take. Justin Forsett, I thought it was very interesting how much Gary Kubiak talked about him yesterday, basically called it great luck to get him picked up, and mentioned multiple times he sees him as a third down back who knows blitz pickup well. Could we see, I know we're still waiting to see our first action out of Marlon Brown. I don't think that'll be the case with Forsett. My guess is he's going to have a heavy hand in the outcome coming up here on Sunday.
At the very least, I think he's going to get the snaps that Capri Bibbs was getting, and we saw how explosive he was in the second quarter last week. The thing that Justin Forsett can do, I mean, he knows this scheme very well. Play under Kubiak in Houston and Baltimore, played in a similar scheme in Seattle as well. So he knows how those creases develop. He knows that you have to be decisive and get to them. I think Devontae Booker, who struggled at times, could learn, may be able to learn some things from seeing how Justin Forsett reads the seams as they develop.
I love Devontae. I worry that we're nearing the rookie wall for a lot of guys, not Devontae Booker alone.
And not only that, I think Kubiak talked about fatigue on Sunday. Chris Harris Jr. talked about it as well. Let's not forget that if you include bye weeks of practice in the postseason, since 2011, the Broncos have had 16 extra weeks of football. I think that adds up over time. I think that contributes to the overall sense of fatigue.
I agree. Well, on these trips back east, Ed was telling me it's maybe not that big a deal, and I'm not going to argue too much with Ed McCaffrey, but I do feel like, for whatever reason, we've had a lot of long trips, and I think that just adds to this time of year's fatigue as well.
Cool. Thanks, Andy.
Welcome back to the AFC West Roundup. We got drama this week. I'm Eric Dalala, joined as always by Benjamin M. Swanson.
Yep. Hello.
Quite the game last night, Ben.
Yeah, assuming this podcast is going up on Friday.
So, oh, yeah.
Thursday night's
hopefully
Raiders-Chiefs showdown. That was that lived up to the primetime billing. Oh. Thursday night games kind of struggle to do so. It's hard to predict which ones are going to be good, but
yeah, especially on a short week after they both had tough games, especially the Raiders on Sunday. It was nice to see that it was a competitive game to the end. We, of course, left work and had to drive to a lovely little tavern up in the Highlands, which was very nice, I thought. Good burgers. But when we got there, it was what, 21 or four, it was 14-3 Kansas City. And
yeah,
then quickly, Tyreek Hill added a punt return for a touchdown after a penalty made the Raiders re-kick. And it looked like the Chiefs were just going to run away with it, but that is not what happened.
No, I mean, the Chiefs' defense was playing pretty well, but their offense kind of struggled in the second half. They couldn't really get a whole lot of stuff going. Alex Smith had a couple turnovers. That hurt them. Luckily for the Chiefs, they kept the Raiders from capitalizing completely on those turnovers, only 3 points off those two turnovers in the second half. Raiders struggled. Derek Carr had a awful, awful game.
Yeah.
Probably the worst of his career.
Woof.
It was
17 of 41, 117 yards, and a QB rating of 7.6. That's not great, Bob.
No.
The Chiefs defense really won them this game because, like you were just saying, the second half started. The Raiders had just gone down and scored right before halftime to cut the lead to 21-10.
Mm-hmm.
And then Alex Smith throws an awful pick. I think it was probably the second or third play of the second half.
Yeah.
They hold the Raiders to a field goal. Chiefs get the ball back. And on the very first play, we remarked as we were watching it, it looked like Smith was just moving in slow motion or like he thought the play was dead or something. But he was just kind of taking his time.
He was kind of just like a statue back there in the pocket. And meanwhile, the left tackle, Eric Fisher.
Also kind of a statue back there.
He tried to push him, I guess, behind Smith.
Yeah, we're talking about Khalil Mack here.
Yeah, and Khalil Mack is not a guy you just one arm out of harm's way.
And that's one of the easier strip sacks he'll get.
Just
put his hand out. Smith had no idea he was there. The Raiders recovered. But again, they didn't get any points out of it. They tried to go for the field goal.
Down.
No,
oh,
they
yeah, field goal.
Field goal.
That's right.
Marquette King, the punter, dropped a snap as he tried to put the ball down for the field goal. Picked it up, tried to run with it, did not work. The second time he got a little bit shown up on the night, the first was when Tyreek Hill returned the punt for the touchdown, and then Travis Kelce, the Chiefs tight end, turned around and did the lasso cowboy celebration in front of his face. That's some good competition. I like that.
Oh, yeah, that's what the AFC West is about.
Yeah.
Nothing more West than the cowboy celebration.
Heck yeah. And now we find ourselves in a very interesting position, I think. Two things to talk about here. We'll talk about the playoff implications of this game in a second because there's a lot.
Yeah.
But first, as I said last night, this just kind of confuses me because you have the Broncos who went in. It confuses me in terms of the Broncos.
Yeah.
Because the Broncos went to Oakland and for all intents and purposes didn't have a chance of winning that game. Not the way that the offense played. The defense couldn't stop the run when it mattered. And Oakland just looked like a dominant team. And then you had this past week when the Broncos, for all intents and purposes, should have beaten the Chiefs. And the Chiefs somehow sneak away with a win. And now the Chiefs beat up on the Raiders. Like, it, you know, it just doesn't
it's confusing. This is such a cliche, but it's like one of those any given Sunday things where you kind of throw out the records in this division.
Yeah, I just wonder if it's a matchup thing too. Like if the Broncos match up better against the Chiefs than they do against the Raiders, and the Chiefs match up better against the Raiders.
And plus, like, one of the things is that, like, you know, football is obviously a game of small sample sizes, statistically speaking, and punt returns are even smaller than that.
But
and this guy, Tyreek Hill, is obviously a very good player, and without that punt return.
Sure, but the Chiefs beat the Raiders twice. I mean, it's not like they beat them in Oakland as well.
That's true.
So I'm not going to discount the Chiefs. They did have a big loss last night. Derek Johnson, very good linebacker for them. I think an 11-year vet, looked like he tore his Achilles.
Andy Reid said he ruptured his Achilles.
He had torn the other one a couple years ago, and as that several sucks. Doctors on Twitter were saying, you know, you trust those Twitter doctors. But it is true. It's the same with an ACL. Once you've torn one, the likelihood of then tearing the other one,
because you're kind of skyrocketing for it.
Exactly. Yeah. Doesn't matter if it's healed or not. It's what happens. Feel horrible for him. And that kind of shakes things up, because as we look the rest of the way, first I would like to point out,
mm-hmm.
Chiefs and Raiders 10-3 apiece.
Yep.
Broncos 9-4. Eight and four.
Yep.
If the Broncos had just held on against Kansas City, there are a lot of, like, if they don't go 80 yards and score that touchdown, all of a sudden you're looking at the Chiefs at.
You're looking at the Raiders at 10-3, the Chiefs at 9-4.
And the Broncos at 9-4. At 9-4. With a chance this
no,
weekend.
No, 9-3.
9-3 with a chance to go 10-3 this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
In which case, this game this weekend would be for first place in the division. And so that's where it really starts to hurt. And then you start to think that, as we were talking about last night, if you don't go to overtime, Trevor Siemian doesn't get hurt.
These what ifs.
I know. I mean, they're painful. They're tough, but that's where the Kansas City loss hurts in the moment, you know?
Yeah.
But it also really hurts now because of tie breaks. The Chiefs now have a much better in-division record than the Raiders and Broncos, which will come into play. The
Chiefs are undefeated in division play.
Yeah, and the Broncos are, what, 1-3 right now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you come down to the end of the year. So here's what has to happen at this point for the Broncos to still win the division, because we were talking about last night, do you want the Raiders to win? Do you want the Chiefs to win? If the Chiefs win, the Broncos have the better chance at getting the division, but if the Raiders won, the Broncos would have had a better chance at the playoffs overall.
Right.
But there's still a path to the division for the Broncos, and what that essentially is likely winning out, which is no easy task. But right,
especially
if you lose
against this
slate. But if you lose to the Chiefs and Raiders, you're not going to win the division. So you have to win out essentially. You can maybe drop the Patriots game depending on what happens with these other teams.
Mm-hmm.
Then you need to hope that you have the same record as the Raiders, because once you beat the Raiders, the division records will likely cancel out. It should be okay. But you need Kansas City to lose another game in addition to the one that they lose to the Broncos. Because if the Chiefs and the Broncos end up with the same record, the Chiefs are going to win the division tiebreak and therefore win the division.
Yeah.
So you need the Chiefs to lose at San Diego. I'm not sure what their other game is. But that seems like the most likely option in addition. But again,
the Chiefs also play the Titans.
Okay.
Titans.
In Arrowhead or
next Tennessee? Week? It'll be in Arrowhead.
Yeah. So, again, you hope that when they go on the road to San Diego that last week, if you're a Broncos fan, that the Chargers help the Broncos out a little bit. But as Gary Kubiak said yesterday, when someone asked him who he was rooting for last night, he's got to worry about the Broncos. They got plenty to worry about on their own. Tennessee's mm-hmm. not an easy matchup. Then you got New England. And then you go Kansas City, Oakland to finish the year. It is a tough, tough slate. And last night's game certainly made things
the other thing that's more problematic for the Broncos is not only that they have a really tough slate, but that the Chiefs and Raiders do not have tough slates.
Sure. Well, I think the Raiders will still lose another game.
They play at San Diego,
I think,
and then at home against the Colts before they come to Denver to play the Broncos at the end of the year.
I could see the Colts beating the Raiders.
It's possible. The Colts are playing well.
They are playing well. And Andrew Luck is, you know, that's the thing, is that we're also talking about playoff seating around the office at times, and whether you want to go to Pittsburgh or you want to go to Baltimore or Houston or Indianapolis, wherever. Indianapolis is not the same crowd kind of distraction that Pittsburgh is, but Andrew Luck, man, there are times when he takes a game over. I mean, they've seen it here in Denver before. Kansas City's seen it. And we've also talked about if Kansas City ends up getting a first-round bye, which we'll talk about more in the coming weeks as things get more clear, but the pressure of them, they haven't won a playoff game at Arrowhead in 20 years. So that could be interesting to watch moving forward. But that's kind of where we are with the AFC West this week. It's heating up!
Yeah. I mean, if the Raiders had won, we'd have a little bit more clarity, but...
Sure. This is
where's
more fun.
The fun in that?
This is more fun.
Where's the fun in that?
Also, if anyone finds a time machine to go back to that Kansas City game, that would make things a lot clearer and easier for the Broncos if they had just gotten away with that. So, another thing I'm just noticing, Kansas City scored all 21 of its points in the second quarter. It's very curious. Anyway, we hope you join us again next week. Thanks for joining us today. For Ben Swanson, I'm Eric DeLalla. We'll see you next time.
I think it's going out there, and it's not just going out there and saying, okay, I'm going to, you know, try to outwit the guy. I want to steal his heart.
Talk about playing with intensity. That was DeMarcus Ware describing how he goes and leaves it all out on the field each and every week. I'm Caroline Disley, and it's time for the Week 14 edition of the Sound Recap. The Broncos are coming off a 20-10 victory over the Jacksonville Jaguars, and we're entering the final stretch of the season here with just 4 games left. The Broncos are going to have to do their best to win all of them in order to have a chance at winning the AFC West. And in order to do so, the running game is a little beat up with Capri Bibbs injuring his ankle against the Jaguars. So to help rookie Devontae Booker out, the Broncos, picked up a veteran guy, Justin Forsett. He knows Kubiak's system and is ready to go this week.
It's awesome, man. It was a godsend. I'm just extremely excited to be here with this organization and be amongst family.
First off, Justin's a real pro. He's been doing this a long time. I don't know how many years it is. I'm going to say it's got to be 9, somewhere near. You know, I had him in Houston for a period of time, and obviously had him in Baltimore. He's, you know, he's the 3-down player. He understands protections. Obviously, he understands exactly what we're doing, so it's nice to walk on the field today and really didn't have a new player in a lot of ways, you know what I mean, other than a new face. So I think he can help us really quick. I think Booker can learn a great deal from him, and, you know, we need somebody to step in and contribute, you know. So I think it gave us the best chance, and just very fortunate to have him.
The Broncos hope that he can help take some of the load off of Booker, who's just trying to get adjusted to the NFL here in his first season. But the Broncos' defense is going to be facing an incredibly tough run game from the Tennessee Titans. It's really all they like to do. DeMarco Murray is one of the best running backs in the league right now and is especially hard when you've got a mobile quarterback like Marcus Mariota.
I'm saying the run game, being able to just run the ball, and they kind of feed off their run to be able to open up their pass. So if we can make them one-dimensional, make them throw the ball all the time, and it'll be tough for Mariota to beat us.
I think he's making quick decisions with the ball. They have him making easy reads, you know, so he can get the ball out of his hands, and if it's not there, then take off with it, you know, protect the ball, you know, keep those chains going. That's what they seem like they're trying to do with him, but, you know, make easy throws to the tight end, which is having a great year for them, and run the ball.
You know, I feel like this is so repetitive, but when you have a quarterback that can run the ball, that creates problems for a defense. You know, we have to make sure when we're rushing, we have to rush in our lanes. We have to make sure we keep contained. And we can't do rushes to where you're picking one side and opening the lane, because he's a good enough quarterback, and there's been plenty of film of him taking off running.
If the defense can stop the run, they'll have a pretty good chance at slowing down this Titans offense. And one of the guys who's going to have to do that is Super Bowl 50 MVP Von Miller. And he's the guy who just is out here trying to make plays, is the thing that he continually says. But just how good is Von Miller? Let Wade Phillips explain that one.
Von had 2 big plays in the game. You know, the interception for a touchdown, he knocked the tackle into the quarterback and made the ball go bad. And then the fumble at the end of the game, he had a good sack fumble at the end of the game because of that. So I've never seen a guy double-team as much as he was last game. It was phenomenal. They talking to their coaches after the game, they said, we weren't going to let him be the difference. And he was the difference. So that tells you how good he is.
That's all we've got for the Week 14 edition of the Sound Recap. I'm Caroline Disley, and we'll be back next week after the Broncos beat the Titans.
Time now for the best portion of this podcast. That's because BTV in the building. Phil Milani with
Matt Boyer.
Yeah. For the next 7 hours, we're going to talk about Christmas lights.
Is this like your rap intro? rap porn. Is that what
that's
this
right.
is?
Yeah, okay, you know how I'd like to do it. No, we're talking about the NFL MVP. Derek Carr struggled on Thursday night in the loss to the Chiefs. I mean, he has a dislocated pinky. I don't really bother him. But we want to know, who are your top 3 MVPs right now?
Well, let's go through the list, shall we? Let's look around the league. You know, Tom Brady possibly could be in the conversation. Obviously, the Patriots probably playing the best football right now of any other team in the NFL outside of the Dallas Cowboys. And when you look at the Dallas Cowboys, you look at Zeke Elliott maybe. You look at Dak Prescott.
Ooh, two rookies. Can a rookie be MVP? Yeah. That's a good question.
I think so. I think – but you got to make the argument between those two. I would say Prescott gets the edge over Elliott just because – I don't know of too many other backup quarterbacks that could slide in and make an impact the way he has. So I would put Prescott in there. I would put Derek Carr in there. Despite his struggles last week, I think he's played well enough. I don't think anybody expected the Raiders to be vying for the number one spot in the AFC right now, so I think he's got to be in there. And then if you look at the Broncos, Von Miller's one of the best defensive, if not the best defensive player in the NFL right now. I like Miller, I like Prescott, and I like Carr.
Okay, but they have an award for the best defensive player.
Right, it's called
the Defensive MVP.
Right. Defensive Player of the Year.
Player of the Year. That's
right.
The same thing.
Right? Okay, fine.
Yeah, no.
Semantics, right? Okay. But
so do you think a defensive player can be the overall MVP even though he has his own award?
There's an
Offensive Player of the Year, I guess.
Right, there's an Offensive Player of the Year, there's a Defensive Player of the Year. Typically, it goes to a quarterback just because that's the position on the field that has the most impact over a football game. J.J. Watt got pretty close a couple years
ago.
Close. I think he had one of the most memorable seasons and played offense. He was catching passes out of the tight end spot in goal line formations. So gosh, you know what? It would be extremely difficult. If Vaughn went on a run, or if a defensive player went on a run for the last four games of the season, it would be hard to count him out.
Yeah, okay. What about Tom Brady? I think that Tom Brady's probably having one of the best seasons that he's had, even though he missed the first four games of the year. Do you think an MVP candidate can be suspended for the first four games of the year?
No, I think he's played very, very well. I think he definitely deserves
votes. So you're eliminating him.
He needs to be in consideration. He needs to be at least considered. But I think not playing the first four games of the season eliminates him from contention, just because I think there are other people that have played well or better over the entire stretch of what are we at right now, 14
weeks.
Week
14, yeah. Okay, so this is an interesting season for the MVP, because you're saying Tom Brady suspended the first four games can't be really it. Defensive player probably not going to be it. That really only leaves you with Derek Carr and Dak Prescott.
Yeah, and I think out of those two, gosh, who thought the Cowboys were going to come out of the
one loss?
Right.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. I think that those two guys definitely deserve it. I think that Prescott, probably more so than Carr, has been surprising. I think that garners some attention. So if I had to pick between those two, I'm picking Dak Prescott.
Yeah, I'm going to go Dak Prescott too. I think he'd be getting a lot more publicity for MVP if he wasn't a rookie. And I think that that's hurting him publicity-wise. Maybe Ezekiel Elliott is hurting him a little bit. But right now, I think he's my favorite.
Now, if Derek Carr leads the Oakland Raiders to a number one seed in the AFC, I think that might change the conversation a little bit. But I do think, like you said, I think Prescott right now, he's the guy in the clubhouse right now with the lead.
Derek Carr was 17 for 41 last night against the Chiefs. 117 yards.
Thursday nights.
You cannot be an MVP and have that kind of game.
Thursday nights do weird things. Tom Brady didn't have to play a Thursday night game because the Patriots had already played it. So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, I think the numbers are a bit skewed. Those Thursday night games, especially on the road, very, very tough. So I think that while, yes, it's not a good performance and it needs to be taken into consideration, I don't think that it should take him out of the conversation for MVP.
Okay, let's get to the AFC West picks. Chiefs versus the Raiders, who do you like?
Chiefs versus the Raiders. I like the Chiefs. I just have a feeling.
I have a feeling the Chiefs might win that one.
Boy, people are probably really sick of us already. It's not even the 5-minute mark. Go ahead.
All right, fine. There's just one AFC West game to predict this week.
Yep.
That's the Chargers at the Panthers.
You know, it's so hard to pick this game because you don't know which Panthers team is going to show up week to week. You don't know if you're going to get vintage Cam. You know, is he going to wear a tie to the game? You know, it's one of those things where you don't know what you're going to get from this team week to week. I still think the secondary has issues. I like the way the Chargers have been playing. Cross-country road trips scare me, but I think that this Chargers team has it. I like the Chargers.
Yeah, I'm taking the Chargers too. I mean, gosh, the Panthers are unraveling.
Yeah.
Derek Anderson is in there for one play, throws an interception.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't have that, and especially with them, they spent the whole week on the West Coast. No excuses for traveling across the country or anything like that, and they just laid an egg right after almost beating the Raiders at home. So really hard to predict there. I like the Chargers on the road, and we'll see what happens. AFC West getting a little bit tighter here now after the Chiefs got the win against the Raiders.
Right. Well, now this is crunch time, right? Everything is kind of leveled off. The Broncos, if they win this week, would only
just one
be
game back.
Just one game back of the division lead. You wouldn't have said that. You wouldn't have said that maybe after the Oakland game. You thought that Oakland was going to kind of roll into December with a commanding lead. Not the case anymore. The Chiefs and the Broncos very much in it.
Yeah, all the teams really right there. Chargers are kind of bringing up the rear,
yeah,
but probably not right there. But
no, but I think,
three teams, though. That's pretty good.
But the thing about the Chargers is that they can make life difficult for a lot of the other common opponents that the Broncos, Chiefs,
they got talent.
Right. They've got a lot of talent on that team. It can make life very difficult for the common opponents that could play into a tiebreaker if it goes that far. So I think that while, yes, the Chargers are out of it, they can still have an outside impact on the race.
Playing spoiler.
That's what you got to do.
The Grinch. Maybe the Grinch.
Philip Rivers.
Scrooge.
Right. Playing the role of Scrooge for some teams in the AFC West.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for the best part of this podcast. That's because Broncos TV was...
Always brings it. We always bring it.
That's true. All right. We're out of here.
I'm Matt Boyer.
I'm Phil Maline. We out. Chill.
I think that episode might have been the best.